extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Now, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, David Goss. Important programming note, ding, 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 ding. All matches free on MLS Season Pass this weekend, coming up March 16th and 17th. So no excuses. If you want to watch games, they're right there free for you. Coming up on this show, Troy Lesane drops by to talk DC's hot start, creating culture and buy-in at a new club. Plus, we dig deep on his game model, the Christian Benteke effect, and the future of the academy in the DMV. Plus, best thing we saw, CONCACAF Champions Cup edition. We are going to stretch a little bit for the best thing we saw because it was a free space type of week. Ecstasy for Columbus and Miami, but mostly agony for Major League Soccer. Plus, we'll dig into our favorite soccer projects around the league. Plus some trends we're looking at, reports of roster rule changes coming down from Tommy Scoops, and we're going to run through some mail from match day 5. David Goss, what's up, man?
It's been a CONCACAF week for sure. It's been one on our heels, is a fair way to put
Cameron,
it.
Cameron is not allowed to stay up to watch the games right now. It's just a little bit too late for him. He gets to watch a little bit of the 8 p.m.s, and if there's an earlier game...
Well, Columbus, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
He was in heaven. It was perfect for him. Otherwise, we watch the highlights while he eats breakfast. He begs for this when he wakes up. It's been tough this week.
Yeah.
Tough to explain to him what is happening to the Union. Tough to explain to him why going to Estadio Universitario that the Volcan melts MLS teams down. It's just been a little...
He doesn't get it just from the name being like, it's a volcano?
Right. Yeah. We got there. He's okay. Impressed. He certainly is impressed by Mexican competition.
Yeah,
he's looking forward to Leagues Cup is what I'm saying. And even playing sounds field, like, you know, MLS in the middle of their season. I'm equipping him with all the reasons.
He sounds like the market demo.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything going on with you? Any familial MLS stories you'd like to take us through, friends?
Yeah, I actually do. Wow. Great setup. Man. Well played.
That's
so yesterday my sister texted me, and my sister's, you know, big sports fan. Follows MLS, goes to games, watches it a lot of times because of me, national team fan, all of that. But she texted and was like, I haven't been able to really follow yet early in the season. My coworker wants to buy Red Bull tickets for her and her family to go to a game. And she asked for advice of like, what's a good opponent? And she's like, I don't know who's good yet. So I don't know who's worthwhile to say. So I was like, well, obviously, if you want to pay Miami, if you want to do anything besides that, Columbus, which they happen to be playing on the last game of the season. So that was like a non-useful
delayed
recommendation.
Gratification, not going to happen.
So I skimmed through the schedule and just without even looking at the schedule, guess what team I recommend?
Oh, man. Got to be an Eastern Conference team. You know, DC United, you could throw out there, former coach. Former primary rivalry. I do think NYCFC is probably the best bet. Again, you might be paying a little bit more, but there's nothing like the New York Derby. Clearly, neither of these are correct, and I'm still fishing.
So,
Toronto FC, Toronto.
Yeah, you were already off from your first sentence, which was you went MLS and not David Goss. I recommended Vancouver, and then they immediately bought the tickets, and I was like, oh, sorry, I'm kind of just a human bit. Like, right. I don't even know if that's a good recommendation.
Intend to meme you into buying.
The problem was they were looking for something in quote unquote spring. So we were like, all of the teams you mentioned were too late in the season. So it was like Orlando, Chicago, Vancouver, one or two other teams. And I was like, that's a solid team. Yeah.
The streets are paved in gold. Brian
Vanny
White
might
coming
be back
to his former stomping grounds. You got a consultancy happening here. By the way, on a similar note with the Miami tickets, my Orange Theory instructor bought season tickets to the New York Red Bulls just so he could make sure that he could go to that Miami game.
Yeah, so I bet.
I'm lighting my prayer candles for him that Lionel Messi is going to be fine because it sounds like Emil Forsberg is not going to be there, which is a bummer for Red Bull supporters, of course, but... We shall see. Any sort of trials and tribulations, you know, we like to hear about your MLS lives and all your prophesizing therein. An own goal to really get us started here. It's a new segment that I just invented. You can imagine what it might be. You know, many shows around the sports media environment do mistakes. You know, they're like, hey, we screwed this up on the last show. I think PTI is the most famous to do those. This is my own goal. Boy, I am ashamed. I absolutely butchered the Ralph Priso trade terms from Toronto, Colorado. And if you know one thing about me, it's that I desperately want to be accurate when it comes to the trade terms of literally any MLS deal throughout time. So I made it sound like the Rapids were a big loser in that trade, that they like gave Mark Anthony Kay plus hundreds of thousands of dollars in allocation money to acquire Ralph Priso, which was just so wrong. Yes. It was a huge winner for the Rapids. It was Mark Anthony Kay. That's all the Rapids sent for $1.025 million in GAM, which is a very interesting specific down to three decimal points number, plus Ralph Priso, plus an international roster spot, which we can just say conservatively is about 200K or more, up to 250 in GAM, plus the first round draft pick of Toronto in 2023 in the Super Draft.
Is that Bombito?
Number three pick, and it was Moise Bombito, who is now being called into Canada and is a starting center back for the Colorado Rapids and one of the best center back prospects in Major League Soccer. So that is my own goal. Head in hands, ball in the back of the net, bring it back to the center circle. We go again, Dave.
Let me defend you a little. One, when you said it on the show, I was like, I think I heard what he said, but you kept moving, so I didn't want to pull back. I think the feeling is there was a lot of excitement when Priso was part of that trade, that it wasn't just assets, that there was like a good young player that we specifically had said Robin Fraser knew from his time in Toronto that fit the Colorado model. And I think the disappointment in the trade to Vancouver is the reality that none of that worked out. And we don't totally know why. And we talked about it a decent amount last year of like, where is he? He gets into the team. He was having games where he'd sub in early for injuries and then be taken back off, but other games where he would start when everyone was healthy. And it seemed like chaos for him. So I think at least your feeling of disappointment, I think, came from that.
Yes, and that is some very deep cut disappointment, if we're being honest. But yes, it was the opportunity
side. Gave you therapy on ETA.
Yeah, it was the opportunity side. Like Ralph, we get ourselves all hyped up. We had seen some good games from Ralph in Toronto, and it's like, there's more. Colorado buys low and either sells high, as they did in, you know, maybe even the case of Mark Anthony Kay. Thought it might be that as well. It wasn't, and I butchered the trade. And so to my friends at Hold the High Line, Holding the High Line, any sort of iteration of the High Line, and any Rapids fan out there that took offense to my wrongness, I apologize for that.
Man, all right. It's always with the Rapids.
I love them. I'm like one of the only... I'm watching you. Yeah. I'm watching the games, Rapids fans. All right, best thing you saw, CONCACAF Champions Cup edition. Four MLS teams eliminated in round of 16. Houston, Philly, Orlando, Nashville, adios. Two of those by the hands of fellow MLS brethren and two by Mexican opposition. Still alive. Columbus, Miami, probably the Revs. They play Thursday night. We're recording Thursday morning. Alajuelense is down 4-0 and fired their coach. So you assume the Revs are going to move on. Probably out. Cincinnati at Monterrey, down 1-0 to a Vasquez goal. Like the reality just slaps you in the face. Like probably out is probably slow playing that situation for Cincinnati, but they certainly have a chance to turn it around. Right now, in the final eight, we have Crew Tigres. That's a great matchup. Unreal. Inter-Miami against either Cincinnati or Monterrey. And then on the other side of the bracket, America Revs, assuming the Revs get through, and Pachuca Herediano. Herediano is the best team in Costa Rica right now. So what's the best thing you saw this week?
Well, depending on what happens tonight, I do think the matchups in the next round being the juiciest thing of like the massive environment, stadiums, clubs in these huge matchups. But with the way things have gone this week, I have to say the Gary Smith face of like they cut immediately to him after Messi's goal that made it 2-0. And the look on his face is one that I think we're going to see from a lot of people this year. We've seen from people forever facing off against Messi of just like, there's nothing you can do about that. And there was a very resigned look of like, I started Daniel Lovis and Lucas Mignon at center back because I had to. And Lionel Messi's playing on the other side alongside Luis Suarez. And this kind of sucks.
Yeah, Diego Gomez, you can see he wants to get the ball back to Messi on that play. He's like, I got to get it back to Messi. And he's waiting. No pressure comes. He pushes it into the box. And it's somehow, was it a pass? Was it intentional? Did it deflect? It doesn't matter. Messi is just, you know, making himself available at all times, drifting into the perfect spots. And when he gets it, it just is inevitable. It's like this was always going to happen. And Nashville are, you know, without arguably their best player in Walker Zimmerman. He is out now 3 to 4 weeks, I think Gary Smith said. And I'm forgetting how to describe the injury here. What was it? It was something, a fairly non-invasive procedure. What is fairly non-invasive?
I have no idea, but I've also never really had surgeries. This sounds like a, don't think it's worse than it is, but also he's been out for 6 weeks. Right.
Cleaning it up? I don't know. Yeah. We have no medical training, so we should probably speculate, but he's out.
Did you not do like an embalmic pentameter about center back depth for Nashville in our preseason?
I don't even know what that is. My poetry.
I just looked up other poetry styles
to that level. That was a very difficult. I don't know what that is. I'm not going to lie here. I'm more of just a haiku guy.
Were you not petrified though of Nashville center back lack of center back depth coming into the season?
No, that was one of the places I thought they would do just fine. But losing Walker Zimmerman, these things happen. Now Leo Suarez also. Luis Suarez, he runs things just as much as Messi does in a different way, I think, as a creator. And we saw that on the Robert Taylor goal. When Miami are going downhill, they are extremely difficult to stop. When they have Messi in the team while they're doing that, it's almost impossible. Here's a quote from Gary afterwards. Well, first the quote on when Messi went out of the game in the 50th minute, which we'll get to in a little bit. Quote, thank goodness. And then the quote afterwards about the influence of Messi, I thought was just absolutely spot on. Quote, he's such a huge influence on the rest of the group. Yes, they have other very good players, but there's no one that can do what he can do. There's an infinite amount of trust in his decisions, his techniques, his ability. As soon as he gets on the ball, everyone else goes into gear, and that is a real problem. It's a problem for individuals playing against him. It's a problem for the midfield players and defenders because now they're seeing runners that they would not normally see. I mean, I thought that is the perfect distillation of this Messi effect, Dave, that anybody who watches MLS, anybody who watches soccer over the last 20 plus years has been trying to describe anytime they see Lionel Messi. And it's just so happening to Gary Smith. And he is the poet in this instance.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time on this show over the years talking about gravity. And Lionel Messi is the most gravitational force in the game's history, maybe, of wherever he is, everyone knows and everyone is affected by every movement he makes, whether in or out of possession. The other thing is, because he is as good as he is, you have no room for error. There were a couple moments where like Nashville did the right thing. There's a couple moments where like Sean Davis makes a slide tackle for a ball coming into the feet of Messi and gets the danger away. You don't get one mistake, though. And that's the problem. And that's what's so hard for a lot of these teams. I made the joke about Gary Smith. They were up against it. Like Daniel Lovett starting at center back in a Champions Cup game against anyone was always going to be tough. This was not Nashville's best group to go out there. And so it was always going to be hard and difficult and surges and starting. Like there was a ton already. This was the first time we've seen with Rondon, the five-man back line, Messi, Suarez, all of it. And I think I saw a lot of what I wanted to see. It's been talked about that Tata doesn't prefer that setup for his team. I can't see a way where this talent doesn't fit into that at its best. So it was interesting to see him lean into that. And maybe Nashville got caught off guard by that as well.
I think that's his only option in some ways right now, given what the right back spot has become. You know, it seems like it's a bidding war in Argentina. It's like, yo, who's got a right back? Who wants to sell us an Argentine right back? Tata Martino is looking. So if it's going to be Gressel, and Tata says that Gressel isn't really a traditional right back in a four, well, let him push up the field and be provider and combiner with, you know, with Redondo and Messi and in these places where he can be clean and simple. And when it comes, play crosses into Suarez and be dangerous with his service. Like it makes sense. Alba is, speaking of own goals, I don't think we put Jordi Alba into our best fullback and MLS convo to start the year on the preseason awards. Maybe my memory's off. Somebody can correct me on that. That's an own goal. This dude is what he's always been, and I don't know why we didn't assume that it would be that times whatever it is, 1.5.
Yeah, but he's also a one-way player.
Sure, but in this formation, he can be that player, no?
100%, but is he a fullback in this formation?
Probably not. He's a winger.
So there's that as well.
Diego Gomez, one of his best games.
Yeah, he was very good.
As well. Like, his urgency and his ability to drive with the ball and make good decisions.
And pick up the ball via counter-pressing, winning the ball back for them. And there were some huge moments that he was involved in, and you could see the excitement with his game. You could see him, I think, feeling more comfortable. Again, I think a lot of it comes down to Rondon, just his ability to...
Redondo. I know you're on the Solomon Rondon train.
Oh, we're about to do that. Sorry. Yeah. My bad.
Dominant in every way. We'll get to Solomon.
But he went sideline to sideline, and that's something Gressel didn't do when he was playing center mid alongside Gomez. It's something Busquets can do. So that is an element coming into the team that didn't exist, and I think it changes the other two midfielders' reality a lot, which is why I think he actually is a better fit than Farias with the way the team is set up.
All right, we'll get into Miami more here. Best thing I saw, we're going to go outside MLS, but still somehow inside MLS, Cade Cowell got booed coming off the field by Chivas fans at the weekend. Cade Cowell, bullet header against Copa America, the arch rivals of the GOATs, after getting booed, of course. Good response from Cade. Now, Chivas still lose to America. America move on, but the pressure is on, and this is what happens when you're in a, you know, a fishbowl environment at a huge club, which is what Chivas is. You know, Cade Cowell's going to have some moments that feel a little bit low, and he's going to have to respond. So, to me, it's like a great development moment for him.
I think he's already been more productive and better, though, than he was at San Jose.
It's incredible.
So it's really interesting. I think Liga MX is a really good fit for him because he is an outlier in the way he plays compared to other players in that league. And so I think he's like a unique weapon that you can't really prepare for because you're not seeing it week in and week out. But he has levels to go in his personal game that we've been talking about for 4 years, that if he doesn't take those steps, he's a threat and he's never a consistent game changer.
All right. How about this for a pure MLS and CONCACAF Champions Cup league, fill in the blank competition feeling? 5-0 Pachuca, and the announcer on Fox, as Pachuca is dragging the ball back heeling it, overplaying, just teasing the Union, quote, "No, please tell me that is not the sixth." It just summed up everything, sort of the absurdity of the moment, the absurdity of the result, the absurdity of believing in MLS in Mexico. Sometimes it just hit me right in the feels. So well done for that one. Let's go quick takes. Columbus, Houston, Crew move on, 3-1 aggregate, 2-1 win, had a little bit of a bumpy road at the end thanks to another defensive issue in the 18 late on. What'd you take away from this game?
I still like that Houston is committed to what they did last year, even without Ache, even without Sebas Ferreira or Quiñones. Like, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. They're going to lose a lot of games or drop a lot of points this year, trying to play out of the back, be super committed in possession. I think overall, the arc is going to be upwards for them of making it worthwhile, of having an identity, of having your players comfortable in the way you play and enjoying the way you play. I thought they played some good soccer in that game. Columbus will let you because that's what they do as well. Like, they're going to open the game up. It's very clear to me so far over the first few weeks, the target against Columbus is the right center back spot, whether it's Moreira or Zwatsky, who it's been most of the year. That's where teams, I think, see that there's weakness and that they can play through them. You also have, of course, both the wingbacks play so high that you can isolate those wide center backs a little bit as well. But in that match, if I said what's going to be the trump card, what's going to be the difference, you're going to say Cucho. Cucho's there. Ache's not. Cucho's a match winner. Other guys aren't. So that was the reality in that first half, and that set everything else up. I thought it was interesting how much Nanse rotated, and it goes back to the point I make every week, which is like, this team added one legitimate first team player from last year, but the Nanse's ability to trust guys, make guys believe, internal improvement, like, that's where this club gets better. And so I don't know if it was forced of like, Rossi couldn't go for these X minutes, Camacho couldn't, all those other things, but they started Cherebko, they started Jones, they started Ramirez and Russell Rowe. That's a ton of rotation for a big time competition game, and they still look like themselves.
I mean, it's the benefit of going on the road and getting a 1-0 win too, right? Results set you up in these competitions to make different sorts of decisions as far as personnel goes. And it's down to Wilfred, but it's also down to, and maybe we'll talk about him later, like Laurent Courtois of the world and all these players who were prepared for the level, or at least able to step up to the level from MLS Next Pro. Like these are the sort of things that over time are going to be differentiators in sustainability of projects. Like, can you bring more contributors through? And we've made the union an example of that, and they certainly are. But what the crew have done is also augment some of those guys moving up through the system, so to speak, with the Cuchos, with the Rossis. And that's where the different level seems to be. Now, we'll see, because Columbus was playing an MLS side. They don't get that. It's Tigres. So now they're about to hit the cauldron, so to speak.
But they may have stolen the ability to get a result last weekend or potentially this upcoming weekend in this one game because they were able to rotate. And then my assumption is, as we get to Tigres, that's going to be the focus. That's where you're going to see maybe Acucho not play on the weekend and Aiden Morris, like things like that. But you're completely right. And not to like fire a random shot at Chicago, but how much money have they invested trying to bring in fullbacks? And Columbus pushes Mo Farsi and Max Arfstein through as the next generation of fullbacks, and they don't have to go out and spend money at that position. So you can focus that money on a Diego Rossi, on a Cucho.
Or in a different way, Yaya Boah, I'm not going to say he was a failed winger signing, but he was not going to make the impact at a traditional winger role that he was brought into play in a 4-3-3 as he is now at your left wingback spot, where he's getting the most touches in the entire team. In the final third, to your rotation point too, I think now of like the way Jim Curtin was talking about managing this and the rotation that they made in MLS. And Curtin made the point in a chat we had, I don't know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that they think like 45 minutes of play, like when you're on at halftime through the end, is the rough equivalent to like a medium intensity training session. And that's where you start to build your rotations, to manage load, to figure out how you can be fresh and have your best player fresh for the biggest games. And it certainly feels like Columbus is finding a way to do that right now.
We kind of glossed over Philly because you talked about it as one.
You want to go there? Or do you want to go Latif? Choose your own adventure. We could put up.
Let's do Latif first.
Okay. So the reports are Houston is going to trade for Latif Blessing. That makes a ton of sense. Not just because we love Latif Blessing, but I mean, they need bodies, one, and they need versatility. And Latif can both play in the midfield. And you would think in a pinch, it's not ideal, but in a pinch, could possibly play wide because that's where he started his career otherwise. What's your take on this?
Gut reaction is what you just said of like, makes sense. Like your initial reaction when you see it is like, oh, of course, he's clearly not going to play in Toronto. So he was available. And at this moment, not everyone is available because of windows being closed around the world, knock on effect of like MLS teams having filled in spots. I think he fits Houston's game model better than New England's last year. And what we've seen from Toronto, which goes back to him at his best, which was LAFC, which was a connector, a short passer, buzzing around a ton, playing higher up the field, counter-pressing at a pretty high level as well. That is a lot of what Houston does well. So I think you might be able to get a deal here in which he's more valuable to you than he is to the other teams. And therefore, Toronto's going to value him less than you will, on top of the fact that they just need MLS minutes. Like they need legitimate MLS players to come in. It's the same reason they signed Jan Gregus in the offseason as well, because of the injuries they have. And he's versatile. You assume they're going to make more moves. You can't guarantee all those moves are going to happen the way you expect them to. And I think Latif's one of those players where, okay, if you bring in another winger, he's a full-time center mid. If you can't get that winger deal done, like you said, you could push him wide and survive. I think he has characteristics like Amin Bassi and Coco Carrasquilla. And so if he can lean on those, he would fit into what they do. This is one of those moves that feels like a good MLS move of like both teams got better because of it. In saying that, because you brought up the Ralph Preso, Mark Anthony K trade, I've been fooled by a bunch of these over the last few years of like center mids that I like that I think will fit even better. Sebastian Legette, Mark Anthony K, Kellen Acosta, like all of these moves where you're like, done, 100%. And then 4 months later, it's like they play 6 minutes a game off the bench.
All right, we'll see with Latif, but the Dynamo needs somebody to bring quality minutes to their rotation right now. No doubt about it. Philadelphia's rotation doesn't have to worry about CONCACAF anymore. It was 0-0 on the banks of the Delaware. And in theory, that could be portrayed as a positive result. That's in theory. In practice, Pachuca ran over Philadelphia 6-0. 5 minutes in, Kai Wagner steps on a foot and it's a penalty. And that's not how you win in Mexico. Like, you can't do it. Making mistakes 5 minutes in, pushing yourself into a position where you might have to open the game up a little bit. And then, you know, to go back to quality, Dave, you kept trying to say his name. Salomon Rondon he was nearly unplayable. It was just his movement, his strength, his vision, his understanding, and sort of snapshots of what was happening around him. You know, where do I take this touch? What's the timing of my run, my pass? I mean, it was at a different level. And we saw that in the result. Jim Curtin, quote, in the second half, Pachuca's talent took over and embarrassed us. He also said, quote, it hurts because it was not a good representation of Philadelphia Union and MLS. Pachuca on the night was excellent. They beat us in all phases, attack, defense, transition, restarts. They outcompeted us and outworked us, which is uncharacteristic for our group.
The uncharacteristic thing is interesting. Last year, right, they lost to LAFC.
I believe that's correct.
And there was moments of that game. That was when Mbizo got the early red card after they gave up a late goal in the first leg at home. I think Kellen scored. And then Mbizo got the early red card and they got crushed in the end.
That was 3-0 at BMO.
That is the only Union game that comes to mind where it felt like they gave up. And it felt like the floor fell out on them. And as much as we're going to talk right now, because we got a lot of questions about it, and for a while, about where's the ceiling, where is the spending, what do they do to push themselves, the reason that conversation can happen is because the floor is so high with them. And this felt different. And I don't know if it's a one-off, or I don't know if it's like the magic is gone. Of like, we believe in ourselves. We have this trust. Our system will get us there. Each guy for us is so important. Everyone has to play at a high level. That keeps us together and pushes us on in these big moments because we can't lean on a DP to save us. Versus like, Jakob Glesnes looked human. Jose Martinez, the goal that gets called back where Rondon chests it down and Sanchez puts it in the corner. Jose Martinez is wiping his face off on his jersey, walking around as the game is being played. These are these things that we just don't see from this team. And it's worrying. I felt that way though, after that LAFC game, and they found their feet again last year, not at the same level we've seen, but they did find who they were again at some point. I think if you're a Philly fan, it has to be a little bit scary of like, has Jim gotten every last drop out of this group now? Cause you brought back Wagner, you brought back Bedoya. It's not like, oh, it's not the same group. It felt like Quinn Sullivan's been an ad with the level he's played at. You already know what you get from McGlynn. I mean, Harriel and Glesnes one-on-one are two of the better defenders in the league, and they get embarrassed on that second goal in stoppage time in a moment in which you get to halftime at 1-0, you're kind of okay. Like, you're an away goal away from tying this thing up. And after the first 20 minutes, they settled. And it's these moments that we haven't seen from Philly before. And I wonder if it is this, like, you go through that game, and as you're playing against Rondon, it's like, we don't have that. We're not going to get this goal. And there was a lack of belief that we've never seen before from this team.
I mean, that guy for the Union is Julian Carranza, right? And he's hurt, and he's not available in the biggest moments, and that's not his fault. It's just that the guys who are supposed to be those big-time difference makers have not been, and at least in this moment, we're not. I mean, it's the Union haven't spent money, but that doesn't mean they don't have guys who have the expectation to play at best in MLS, best in this particular game, maybe not always in Mexico, but like Andre Blake, that shot that hits him, he goes down low and it goes in. Like, these are things that we're not used to seeing and things that can't happen if you're going to win in Mexico. Jakub Glesnes, like, getting circles run around him and just kind of not looking like he's... This is not just this game, by the way. It's been the start of the season for Jakub Glesnes when his level was so high. Like, crazy, crazy, crazy high. Martinez, same thing. Mikel Ua, Daniel Gazdak. Jim Curtin said, like, we want to be a championship team. We've been a great team. But to be a championship team, You got to have guys, regardless of the collective, because the collective can get you there. It can raise the floor. It can put you in position, but you still got to have the guys that make the difference. Who are those guys going to be right now? It should be Uwe. It should be Gazdag. But then you go back to price tags. Like, are we putting too much expectation on Uwe to be a 12 to 15 goal scorer when he's a $2.7 million signing? I know not everything is like, hey, money equals XYZ. But when you're looking at Cucho and it's like, well, there's a different pedigree and there's a different experience level and there's a different ability to impact games in different ways.
Yeah. The big one, and I've gone back to them a bunch over the last year, is Cincinnati. Of like, Cincinnati had a strength and then they continue to add at a higher level, and Philly has a strength, and so they lean on that strength and then try and find some more against the margins on other parts, rather than being like, how can we bring in Miles Robinson? Imagine this game,
right,
with Miles Robinson. I like Damian Lowe. I think he's a legitimate top three MLS center back. He clearly is not making Glesnes' life easier. And I think that's a little credit to Jack Elliott.
I think the flip side goes as well. I mean,
yeah. And it's not
making his life easier.
For sure. But imagine this game with Miles Robinson. And like, that was never even probably on the table for Philly, where since he's like, yeah, let's take the risk. Let's see what happens.
How about a Bupenza?
Well, that's the big one. Bupenza is the one where it's like, okay, you got Brandon Vasquez to work out for you. That's a very similar move to Carranza, of like, unexpected. Now you're getting a ton of production instead of putting something next to him that's like, oh, we can lean on Vasquez or Carranza. They went out and got Bupenza, and then Bupenza was ready to be the guy when Vasquez left. Now, in saying this, this show is going to come out and then an hour later, since he's going to lose 6-0 in Monterrey, but that's still the point.
Well, speaking of Jonathan Yardley, crunch the numbers. Here's MLS in competitive games in Mexico. 5 wins, 5, 58, and 14. In two-leg series, 13 and 49. 13 wins, 49 losses against Mexican opposition in two-leg series. When the second leg of those series is in Mexico, 5 and 31. I mean, the numbers are, they remain stark. They remain stark. And, you know, I've seen, you know, Herc and others sort of point out like, hey, Mexican media right now is saying like, Leagues Cup wasn't real. That's not right. Like, and U.S. media or Canadian are like, you know, well, you know, here's our excuses. That's the same for any time any of these teams lose. But it's still very clear that in CONCACAF, Champions Cup, League, whatever, Mexican opposition, it just still reigns supreme. There's still only one team that's done it. And there haven't been enough instances of quote-unquote elite teams doing against elite Mexican teams to, I don't know, to put like all your hopes and dreams on it, which sometimes I do.
Anders would like me to offer up a mea culpa and correct myself that I said Damian Lowe was a top three MLS center back when I meant top three on your roster rotation. But I'm actually going to turn that down and I'm going to triple down on this. And I'm going to say for a second time, Damian Lowe is a top three center back in MLS.
Let's go.
And you, Anders, can go wherever you want with that.
Zero own goals for Mr. David Goss. No own goals, I don't think, in Tigres Orlando. Again, that was a 0-0 at home, but ended 4-2. This was a just put it in the like put it in chat GPT and be like, hey, what's a typical second leg result at El Volcan for an MLS team with some semblance of hope? And this was what popped out. Goalkeeper, is it a bobble or is it an error on Gaye said it, the first goal?
I think it's an error.
It's not one that you want to see go in the back of the net. And when you go down 1-0 to Tigres on the road, you're basically admitting that you are going to be in a lot of open field situations against their best players. Then there's a weak penalty on Dagger Dan. Would you call it weak, or is it a bang on penalty for you? A little push in the back.
No, I thought it was weak. Did you think Kai Wagner, that one was weak?
He stepped on his foot.
But it's like completely accidental and doesn't really feel like it affects.
I would say that it falls in the category of like, this is CONCACAF, isn't it? Like, if it's going to go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. 100%. Then there's another weak penalty. This time, Gignac on Janssen. I didn't see much there at all. A nutty clearance giveaway from Ladero that falls to the feet of Tigres and then is a phantom goal. Probably didn't cross the line. That makes it 3-1. Then Carioca karate kicks Ramiro Enrique in the face / neck. Then there's another late PK, the third of the match. And then Gallese has another issue on the final goal.
It is. We had it with Vancouver. The Vancouver first leg was like cliche of like outplayed Tigres, work them, all these things, crowd behind them, blah, blah, blah. Didn't score enough goals, lost the series. And this one, like you said, is every bit as like, this is the script. This is the narrative. This is what you expect to happen. And for Orlando now, it's the second time in a year that it's happened to them with Tigres. And I think you still leave with the feeling of like they belong on the field with them. There is quality there. There are moments, but there's no point over the course of the four games and that now a year of CONCACAF competition between the two clubs where it felt like Orlando threw Tigres off and threw them a curveball or made them uncomfortable or shifted that narrative of like, oh, yeah, you are worried. It was always played in the way that Tigres is like, we can give 90% here, 70% here. The game can open up for these moments and close down for these moments. And in the end, it's exactly who we want to be.
Yep. Well, pain for Nashville as well. Seems like New England will move on. And we talked about Cincinnati. Anything left from CCC or you want to throw to Troy Lassane? Let him tell us about DC United.
Let's go.
Let's do it. Please welcome Troy Lassane to the show, the manager of DC United. Troy, welcome to Extra Time.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Andrew. Looking forward to it.
So let's start with something that you were looking forward to, I'm sure, and that was the opening game of the season, but are not on the sideline. How much did that kill you to watch your team go out and win big and not be right there on the grass with them?
I definitely wanted to be a part of it, but I can't say that it killed me because I was with them, you know, in the trenches for the first 6-7 weeks of the season, and actually seeing Zach lead our group in the fashion that he did to get the club the first win in 2024 made me extremely proud. So I certainly wanted to be there with the group, but at the same time, I can't say that it's not about me on that day, Andrew. That's for sure. On match day, it's about the players.
So you're in the trenches, you're building a culture, you're getting buy-in. And I think back to that Red Bulls team last year, it seemed like they picked up on what you were putting down really quickly. How do you build that buy-in, that culture, that understanding of what you're asking for the players so quickly?
Yeah, I think there's a few factors too. Thank you for saying that, by the way. I thought the work we did last year, I'm really proud of that work, and I do think there was a lot of buy-in there, and I think that's why Ali Mackay saw something in me to provide the next opportunity here with DC United, and I'm thrilled to be here now. I think that you go about building a culture and an environment in a couple ways. I think two main ways, which is to say you need to have a very clear vision in which you want to go and make progress on every single day and make sure that everyone understands exactly how they play a part in that, from players to staff to supporters. Everyone included in the club has to understand exactly what that vision is towards creating the right culture. And then the second part is just trying to be myself, Andrew. I mean, I try to be as true to myself as possible, no matter who it is that I interact with. And I think that level of authenticity usually, connects with people in the right way.
Who's Troy Lassane then? I was watching a video on YouTube back in the Charlotte Independent days.
Okay.
You were putting down cones, setting up for a game, and you said, I'm very OCD. I can even be anal.
Yeah.
What? Tell me about Troy Lassane, man. Who are you?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a couple of descriptors there. I'm glad you dug up some old archive footage there from my Charlotte Independence days. I definitely am someone that focuses on the details of things. I mean, that's for sure. I probably hyper-focus on some things too much, but I do think that's part of who I am. I'd say who I am is someone that's that likes to connect with people. Using that word again, I really do. I like to find out what other people are about and what motivates them. And ultimately, my job is to bring the players that I work with to their best capacity. And I want to try to pour everything that I have and into that individual progress and individual development and ultimately the team development. So I think I'm someone that has humor. I can probably self-deprecating humor. As you just poke fun at me in my Charlotte Independence interview, I have to laugh at that because that's I think, again, a reflection of who I was at that time and still am. I'm absolutely thoroughly enjoying every single second. And that's part of who I am as well, is to make sure that I enjoy this process.
Relentless, deliberate, decisive. What do those words mean to you? What do you want them to mean to your players?
Yeah, I mean, I think every coach talks about at some point in their coaching career, they talk about the team has to reflect a little bit of their identity and who they are, right? And so I think that those three words definitely resonate with the makeup of who I am, to go further into the question you asked before. And so then I go a step further after I think that those words mean something to me and say, do they really relate to this group of players, to this club, and where we want to take the club ultimately. And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And so one thing we did, Andrew, was we said, prior to even giving those values that you just mentioned and relentless, deliberate, and decisive, we said we need to define exactly what it means to be united at DC United. And so if we're checking those three boxes every day, not one out of three, not two out of three, all three, and each of those three words have a clear definition as well, to make sure that we know exactly what that means, then we can say that we're united in the right way. And again, that's back to that clear vision and creating the right culture and environment.
Take me to the vision on the field. What's the game model? Some people will look at your time at Red Bulls and immediately think, oh, hey, Troy Lessain is a Red Bull disciple coach, but you have such a long coaching career and that is just but one little part. So what is this DC United team supposed to look like in your mind and your staff's mind?
Yeah, number one, and I say this often in interviews, the values that you just mentioned have to now relate to the style of play. So we want to be a team that's relentless. We want to continue to push every single and be aggressive at every single point in the match. And that can be aggressive from a lot of different ways. It just doesn't have to be against the ball, like you mentioned, in a Red Bull pressing type manner. Although I think that we've laid a very good foundation so far in how we go and disrupt teams. But we can also be relentless and aggressive in how we are with the ball and really try to keep the opponent in, which I think in two out of our three matches, maybe two and a half, we did that quite well, with the exception of the half. I think second half for Cincinnati, they had the better of the game in that match. But style of play-wise, we do want to be aggressive. We want to be proactive. And we have a lot of individual talent in our team, so we have to allow for creativity as well. And I think a team that you're going to see this year is one that has some of the foundation of against the ball principles that you've seen before in my time at Red Bull, but has a real identity with the ball as well. And I like the way that we're trying to create chances right now. I think we're tops in the league in that. So that we're going to double down on that.
Is it fair to say that that method is to be direct, to be vertical at times? What's the right way to describe the chance creation? There's a ton of crosses right now, and I understand Benteke, but you know he's only played one game. How would you describe that?
Yeah, I think vertical when appropriate, but when also appropriate, we can break a team horizontally to try to look for overloads in the right areas. When you look beyond Christian Benteke, which I think you can't minimize his impact. So when we have him, we want to use him. When we haven't had him, we have other weapons, and so those weapons include Aaron Herrera, Christian Dahomey, Jared Stroud, Gabby Pirani, Matty Click, Ted Cudipietro. So they have different skill sets, and that's where we have to be flexible in how we attack. And that goes back to, if it's on to play vertical, then let's go. If it's not, then we have to be patient and find our tens and our fullbacks and get them into the right areas.
I've heard more coaches in press conferences, and probably just because advanced analytics have become more de jure in the game, reference XG and other such things. You look at the report that I'm sure you get after games. Most coaches have a customized one of things they want to see. What are the most important numbers on that report for you?
I think that those reports are beneficial, but we have our own internal reports. So when you ask about style of play, we have a number of KPIs that we track for individuals and for the team. And so, you know, this is our reporting that we have in our game model, and we do it manually. I mean, our video analysis crew and my coaching staff, they put in a lot of work towards tracking those just manually, by themselves. Again, that gives us a really good indication if we are living up to the style of play that we say that we are.
Can I get you to share one?
Yeah, a good against the ball one is our first sprint. So many times that's our nines and tens, sometimes our fullbacks. And what that means is that we're immediately putting the opponent under pressure in the area that we designate. And if we're doing that often, and there's, again, certain numbers that we hit in that area that are acceptable or unacceptable for the individual players, then we feel like it's having an influence on the game. And then a simple one with the ball is, you know, how many times are we getting into box cross situations? So that's just, you know, the space just inside the 18 and kind of a crossing area. That's an important component of where we want to get to and finish attacks.
How much of the aggression that you're talking about is meant to control real estate? You know, we often talk about controlling the ball, but it feels like, just again, I'm looking through the data, watching games, that where you want to be is in the opponent's half, and you're doing just about everything you can to keep the ball there.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. That's exactly how we want the game to play out. And, you know, just from a really simple standpoint, if the game is typically played in the opponent's half, then we feel like we're going to get a result on the night versus playing in our half. And especially with the ball, playing in our half with the ball sometimes I think is a little bit of an inefficient exercise. And so we challenge ourselves to build in a way that, again, leads to us to getting in the opponent's half as quickly as possible.
2 p.m. Eastern, Saturday, Audi Field, Inter Miami, Lionel Messi, Leo Suarez, fill in the blank. We could go down the line with the names. This game can't feel like other games, Troy. I don't believe anybody that tells me it does. How does a game like this maybe feel different in the lead up, in the locker room, on the field? Like, there's going to be a different buzz.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think I can give you the coach talk and say, you know, we're going to prepare like we do every other week. And you're just not going to hear me say that because it is different. And the reason I know it's different is I experienced it last year at Red Bull. And the players have a different focus for the week. And it's not that they're any less focused, but there's other components at play beyond just Messi and Suarez, Busquets, Alba. I think there's a heightened sense of attendance, which there always is. There's a heightened level of security. So the stadium feels a little bit different than most regular season matches. There's a heightened sense of media involved in it. And for the right reasons, by the way. I mean, you're talking about some of the greatest players and the greatest player, in my opinion, of all time. But that said, it's about how do we combat that and prepare our team in the best way possible. And so that was something we addressed today with the group. And experiencing last year, I think, was a good thing for me. So I can try to again, combat some of those things going into the weekend. And we're not going to be able to combat all of them, that's for sure.
How do you game plan for the GOAT?
Well, the first thing is to see how they play tonight and hope that they progress in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, because that obviously played a part in him not playing against Montreal. So, you know, last year he didn't start against us, and I actually don't know if that benefited us, because now the full attention was, when's he going to come in the match? And the crowd wants that. And it's just I think I described it last year as a spectacle, and it really is. And by the way, when he ends up playing in the game, if he does play, it is a spectacle, because the things that he can do are just no one else can do. So preparation-wise, it's about trying to prepare the team as if he will play, but also not putting every single bit of focus on him and Suarez in the event that they don't play.
Take me into a guy that they're going to have to game plan for. Maybe Christian Benteke. Do you think he'll play a big role? And I need to know the story about him showing up on the team bus in Cincinnati as well.
Well, I think they have to prepare for Christian Benteke and Matty Click. I mean, these are two top, top level players for us that I think most opponents should be preparing for. And Christian's going to be, you know, a question. Hopefully he'll be fit to play. He's gotten back in training this week, but it's a question going into the weekend. Players outside of that, again, Aaron Herrera has shown in the league over the last 6-7 years that he's a very influential right back. And for us this year, I think he's been a centerpiece in how we go and try to play in the opponent's half and get final actions in the opponent's half. And then I'm excited for players, you know, like Christian Fletcher, Christian Dahomey, Jackson Hopkins, Tay Kutapitra. These are young players for the most part. Outside of Dahomey, that have a skill set as well that the opponent needs to respect. And what better way for them to showcase themselves than playing against a team like Inter Miami when they're at full strength, even if they're not at full strength, by the way. Christian,
give me that story, man. I got to hear the story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too many details to it. It just is Christian is what I found from him in the short time working with him at DC United is that he is one of the most selfless people that you will ever be around. I mean, he is very generous. He wants to give to others. Anything that we've tried to implement, he's the first one to try to get behind the idea, whether it's style of play or culture. And when he got injured against Portland in the pre-match, again, full support for the team. He actually gave the post-match message to the team about how proud he was of them. And then we're preparing to go to Cincinnati knowing that he's not going to be able to join us. And, you know, he wishes as well in the last training session. And then it comes around to Sunday morning and there's this towering figure standing, you know, outside the bus ready to say good luck to the boys. And I just said to him, I was like, Christian, man, you could have traveled with us, you know. And he said, I just didn't want to be a distraction. I wanted to show up and just support the guys. And that's basically what it was. And it gave us all a lift because he wants to be there every second. And hopefully it's more time on the field than that scenario.
Getting the best out of your DPs is a recipe for success in this league. It's a collective effort, but ultimately the investment, the expectations are bigger on those guys. Matty Klick has had a hell of a season. Like, he looks like he's operating in different parts of the field with a different element of confidence. What have you seen from him? What's the best way to get this out of him?
For Matty, I think the benefit of his experience throughout his career is that he's had a little bit of this style of play with Jesse, with Bielsa, and again, a completely different level in fashion, but he has an understanding of the principles. So that really helps when you have a player, especially in the center of the field, that knows what's required whenever you go and you try to be aggressive in the opponent's half. And then with the ball, I mean, this guy's vision, his calm under pressure, and the level of gamesmanship that he has, that experience is part of the reason that it drives our team to get results on the road like we did the past two weeks. So, again, very happy to work with him, and I've enjoyed my time. He's a character, too. I mean, he's got a big personality, and that's what you need to have success, as well as to have big personalities that ultimately want to display that personality in every single weekend.
So this is a bit of a Teddy KDP Stan podcast. I just need you to know that it's longstanding, going back to the academy days, for instance.
Stop it, Cudi Pietro. What a goal.
That's going back to the GA Cup days, Troy.
Okay.
What can you get out of this guy? We love him on this show.
Yeah. Well, let me first give you since you're a big fan, he goes by Ted or Ku, does not like Teddy. Just so you know, Andrew.
Okay, that's it was just catchy. It just Teddy KDP just rolls off the tongue. So we will retract all mentions.
I get it. If you're a Rounders fan, you get it even more. And I'm a Rounders fan. So that's where I think that nickname may have originated from. Ted is someone that Zach and I at New Mexico United desperately tried to sign. So like it goes back to those days for me whenever he was at Loudoun, prior to signing with the first team. So we've seen him and know what his ability is, his influence is, and we got to see that in the first 2 weeks, especially at Portland. I think right now the name of the game is to get him fit and for him to consistently be fit so that he can operate at his best level. I think he's absolutely a player that should play in a position that he's shown for us in the first 2 weeks, which is centrally with freedom to operate in a manner that allows his intuition to take control of the game, because it's just a special intuition that he has. And you don't want to try to box that in. You want to let a player like that go and express themselves. And I'm looking forward to him getting back into the team fit and influencing our team in a really positive way.
So Ted is kind of on a part. See, I've already fixed my habit there. Ted is already a big part of your team, but you have other young players you want to bring through. And certainly, you know, DMV is a hotbed. We know this from years past, from the Nahars and the Hamids and the Paredes, et cetera. It felt like there for a while, though, DC was stuttering a little bit at the academy Loudoun to first team transition, that getting guys from the level there and performing to do it on the first team level or to acclimate in the right way was sort of stalled. How do you balance the needs of young developing players with the demands of a first team? What's the right strategy?
Yeah, I think number one, making sure that the players that are in the first team have an individual development plan that really makes sense for where they're at right now and in their career. So Ted's young, yes, but he's first team ready now, and he's, you know, worked to get to that level. I think Jackson Hopkins, Christian Fletcher, Matai, those are three players that are definitely first team ready, but maybe they're not going to have as many minutes as Ted is. And they're still maybe a year away from being first 11 guys, although Jackson and Christian have shown in a short time that they are knocking on the door for that. So when they don't have the ability to play with the first team, that relationship with Ryan and Loudoun is very important, even though it's not a, you know, an official second team for us, it's still a partnership that's there. And then I think in the future, you're going to see us expand to Baltimore, hopefully next season. And I think that'll pay dividends for us for the players that are just behind those four players that we've talked about. There's another crop of 2, 3, 4 players that are with Loudoun currently. And the reintegration and reconnection to Loudoun and our academy is, again, part of that clear vision. I've spent a lot of time in the first 2 months making sure that they understand where we're going as a first team and really as a club. And I think that's a big part of it in general.
Is there an MLS club that you admire in terms of staff that you admire in terms of how they do these things?
Yeah, there's a bunch. I think LAFC and what they've done since the beginning with John Thorington, you know, really in charge of that entire club. Their ownership group has done a tremendous job. Bob obviously got things started, and his staff, and Ante and Mark DeSantos, those guys in particular, and then Steve, whenever he took over. It's really impressive what they've built. And I would also put Jim Curtin and Pat Noonan up there for guys that I've just had more interaction with and have a tremendous amount of respect for what they've built. And in a short time, not just because Wilfred wins it last year, but what he did in Montreal too. Mm-hmm. These are coaches that I think have really put their stamp on things. There's plenty that I'm missing, but those are four that stand out.
So the crew sort of showed us sometimes that ideas can translate quickly and that results can come quickly. And now investment came with that as well. And there was a long trail that went into the title last year. But, you know, MLS is not a league where sometimes long-term projects always get the most patience in the short term because of the demands, because of the playoff schedule. What is this team that you're leading right now capable of in the short term, like this season?
Yeah, I think, Andrew, what we've talked about internally is we understand where we've been in the last 5 years, but we're not spending and the last 10 years not having a playoff win, but the last five seasons not competing in the playoffs. We understand that. We're not spending a lot of time dwelling on that, but we also have to say to know exactly where we're going, where have we been and where are we currently, obviously, and staying really present in that, trying to build on that now to where we want to go in the future. And so I think we all feel like we need to get back into the playoffs. DC United has to be a team that is competing to get back into the playoffs, and that's our responsibility. And we don't want to have any disillusions of grandeur and say, you know, we want to win a championship this year. I think that's clearly the goal for every team, is to lift a trophy at the end of the year. But when we talk about being pragmatic and taking a big step forward, making the playoffs after not being in it the past five seasons would be a big step forward for DC United. And then one step beyond that, I think, is to progress and get our first win in 10 seasons. So I think those are the two things in front of us right now that are objective results. But I think it's much more about the short-term progress we want to make. And I think in the first three matches, you've seen a lot of progress and going in the right direction for what will allow us to achieve those objective results at the end of the year.
Troy Lesane, manager of DC United. Thank you so much, Troy, for your time. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Super thankful to Troy for giving us some time to dig into the project, what they're doing in DC. It's been exciting so far for DC United supporters. We'll see if DC can keep that up. They're playing Inter Miami and Messi, 2 p.m. Eastern, all games free on MLS Season Pass. That's Saturday. Seems like Messi might not be involved. Dave, Troy basically said in that interview, like, I kind of hope he's not involved. You know, Troy's looking out for points for number one and not necessarily for those who want to see the GOAT. But yeah, that could be a big break for them. What do you think about DC overall? Like Ali Mackay, Troy Lesane, these young guys with vision taking over a club that needed a little bit of vision and a little bit more of a long-term connection between what we're trying to do now and what it means a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now.
It's the most hopeful I've been about DC, I think, since pre-Rooney. Like, I don't even think maybe the stadium, that moment alone was such a big deal and there was so much building behind it. But even the Rooney acquisition at the time was like, this is a one-off flyer of like a unicorn player, but not a change in structure that this club's going to shift. And I think when I look at DC and my hope with the two people they put in charge of this in Ali Mackay and Troy Lesane, it's not just their age, which is, I think, exciting for a lot of people of like, we get into the Belichick pet thing of like, everyone's a genius and young and whatever. I just think it's two people who have built process of winning in North America. So for Troy in USL and for Ali Mackay in MLS with what he helped put together in Nashville, not trophies, but I think a team that we can admit has been pretty successful in a lot of the moves they've made. That feels different than for DC, which has felt scattered over the years. And I think when you look at MLS clubs and We're going to talk about Minnesota and where we think they're going with Eric Ramsey, and obviously the interview you did as well last week with them. But it is, I think for MLS clubs, there's a lot that's going to be the same about every team. Like, it's a salary cap. Everyone's bringing in a Scandinavian center back, an Argentine winger. They're trying to find their DP or borderline TAM D mid, pushing through two homegrown. Like, there's a lot that are similar about teams. Where on the margins are you going to build? I think consistency, I think culture, I think process, those are things that can help clubs take a step. From when I've been around Troy Lessain and from what I've heard about Ali Mackay, I think both of those guys understand that. And so if I'm a DC supporter, that gives me hope, not that they'll make the playoffs this year, but that like this year, what ends will be the start of what you hope will be good next year. And again, the following year.
And I think sustainability within those things that are good, so to speak, like to get to a point with the talent that's in the DMV to where you are bringing through one actual first team players, whether it be, hey, they're making their leap this year or they're finally getting into the first team, to augment your roster, to having a style of play that makes sense from the top down and isn't going to be thrown up and changed the first time something gets hard. And there has been investment. Like, to be clear, in that interview, like, Christian Benteke sounds like, and we know this from meeting him and being around him, yeah, he is just a one. I don't know. I don't know him personally, but all my interactions, he seems like a wonderful human being. And to understand like the role that he can have with his teammates and within the club, but not have too much of an ego about it. Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. We'll see what they can do against Miami. Seems like maybe no Messi, but probably Suarez. Any chance at home against the pink guys, you got to try to show out.
Troy's feeling about that, it's what you'd expect, right? You're a coach. Yeah, you're going to say we want best against best. You want points. I would be interested to hear what a player thinks for like, it's going to be easier, but like, it's probably your one opportunity to play against Messi in your life.
You want to play.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. You said Minnesota. We had a tweet here from Dan Elias who said, what are you looking for as Eric Ramsey takes the sideline for the first time against the defending Western Conference champs? Minnesota is hosting LAFC this weekend. You can watch that MLS season pass 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Is there anything like on the field you're looking for? Is it bigger than that? He just got introduced. Nothing crazy from his press conference that I could tell, but we'll try to chat with him in the coming months.
It's going to be tough to say, like, there's a lot to see because, one, they've been fairly successful so far. Reynoso hasn't been available, so I don't know that we're going to learn a ton about who they are and what they want to be. But I think for Minnesota, the frustrations at the end with Adrian Heath when they were still in playoff contention last year and he got let go was there has not been a point in Minnesota's time in Major League Soccer where they put their imprint on every game and said, this is who we are and this is what we do. And that is a winning formula. Going back to what I said about Houston, being able to predict who you are, yeah, it helps teams prepare for you, but it also helps you perfect those things. It helps you bring players in to fit that model. Minnesota has brought in players in a way in which it's like talent is good, talent wins, and they've won some. They've been good. They've made cup runs. They went to a U.S. Open Cup final. They went to a Western Conference final. It's like they've had good moments. And Reynoso is obviously an incredible talent. And it took them, 18 months to get that deal done? And they did. So credit to a lot of that. But I think that's the question going forward with Minnesota. And so it will be interesting because, as Doyle has talked about, like, does Reynoso fit into a style with Ramsey? So then how dogmatic are you to that? How long does it take to build it coming in brand new, but not having a preseason to work? I think that's going to be a lot of the interesting things. So I think there's not one specific tactical wrinkle where I look at them and say, like, love to see DJ Taylor get into this type of space. I'd love to see them move Pookie into the right half channel more often. But I think week to week, it'll be, what are the things he falls on that he likes and what does he continue to try and progress as they go through each game?
Seems like that press is going to be part of it. Some sense of aggression and trying to win the ball back and go direct. Those have been some of their best moments. Certainly that was the case against the Crew. Let's dive into match day 5 real quick. And again, all games free on MLS season pass this weekend. Let's start with this question because I was just mulling it myself. Which soccer project is most interesting to you right now? Or are you spotting a trend? And I'm spotting a trend It's not that hard to spot. Anybody who's paid attention to this league over the last couple seasons or pays attention to soccer worldwide is going to see these things coming through. But it's this idea of a 3-4-3, of building with three center backs and then two sort of, you could call them pivots, whatever it is, two central midfielders in front of them, and then two central attacking players that are going to act as levers with two very wide, you know, players who can help him build up on overloads, but then also stretch the back line once you do advance the ball. And you see that with the Crew. You know, you see them build with that three. It's very clear, and Nagby and Morris, and then the wing backs really push high, and you have a center forward that occupies the center backs and sometimes even comes out, and then two attacking players that can make vertical runs, that can go side to side, that can just change the shape and receive the ball in the half spaces. And so many teams are turning to that, especially in possession. RSL is trying to do it. You know, Seattle is trying to do it. Houston have built out of a 3-4-3 in this possession style that they're putting together. FC Dallas are trying to do it. Montreal are doing some version of this right now. I mean, you can, there's, I'm surely there are more that I'm not coming up with off the top of my head.
It felt like even out of the 4-4-3-3 or whatever it was for Nashville, they were trying to do it in Miami.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a huge, it's not just MLS. It is a lot of the most influential coaches in the world and the teams that people watch and they steal things from. This is a natural progression in the way that any league in the sport works. Like, you're going to try to go get best practices, or you're going to be impressed by what somebody else does, but just pay attention to what teams are doing on that front and how well they're doing it. Cause there's a lot of growing pains right now. And then some teams that have found a way to balance it and do it right. How about you? What's something you're watching or just like popped into your head recently?
To Nashville, what I just said in watching the first 20 minutes against Miami, I talked about this a little bit coming out of the RSL game, for Inter Miami. I believe in balance in soccer teams. Like, if I built a team, the reason I go on these long things about the Latif Blessings and the Ralph Prisos of the world and Coco Carrasquilla and guys, like, I love two-way players. I love connectors. I don't
Jones.
Yeah, exactly. I don't love flair players all the time. And like, if it was me, I'd build a team of 11 guys who just have clean touch and connect the game and just rotate everyone all the time. Miami are imbalanced. The nature of the way the roster is built is they're imbalanced. They are so good offensively. They have obviously this insane background of soccer from the Barca squad and the Fab Four and all this type of stuff. I don't think you can beat them by being balanced yourself. And what I saw from Nashville, and I think part of it was personnel and part of it was forced on them, but like, they tried to play through Miami in those first 20 minutes when they had opportunities. They tried to have Boyd or Hany Mukhtar drop in and play it off them. They had to just go long and play over the top. And like, you need to sit all the way in and then try and hit on the counter in absurd ways and not really play soccer, or go all out and throw everything forward and try and score more goals than them. Like, I think trying to be yourself against this odd thing, which is at a level we haven't really seen in MLS when it's on, and it won't always be on. So that's part of what's tough. Like, for Montreal, they didn't get Messi, so their game is going to be a little bit different. But it's in a way in which you can't really play normal soccer. Like, you have to, I think, adjust to that in that one-off moment and see how your characteristics fit. And I think there probably was an idea of that for Nashville, of like Boyd, Schaffelberg, and Hany on the counter. But they, in those first 20 minutes, they kept trying to play either between the lines or dink the ball over the midfield line and bring it down in midfield. And it's like, throw that ball into the channel and make Aviles and make Christophe turn and run and make Drake Callender make decisions off his line, which we've seen be questionable so far. And at the minimum, don't turn it over and give them counter attacking chances. I think you have to treat it almost like Greg Berhalter treated the Red Bulls when he was in Columbus, where it's like, they're doing something outside of the norm, so I need to react with something outside of the norm just this one time.
I mean, it's going to be a theme throughout the entirety of the rest of the year. It's why I asked Troy Lesane, like, how do you game plan for this player and this team? It just presents non-traditional, as you sort of put it, opportunities and drawbacks to what you're trying to do. We'll see what happens this weekend with or without Messi for DC United and everybody else through the rest of the season. Robert Scherer hit us up and said, which teams at the top of the standings won't be there at the end of the season and which teams at the bottom will take their place? I'm not so sure that teams at the bottom will be the ones that take the place, But as you look at the top of the standings, who's got shaky ground, in your opinion, despite the good vibes? In the East, there's five teams tied on 7 points. That's Miami, Montreal, Columbus, New York Red Bulls, and Toronto FC. In the West, we got 2 7-pointers. That's Portland and Minnesota United. I think you could pick some holes in at least all but maybe three, maybe even just two. Might just be Miami and Columbus that are holeless.
Yeah, as I talked about this week or last week, I have confidence in New York. I think Toronto is the one that stands out to me. The lack of depth of the roster, which I think they will add to, like clearly they're making moves to open stuff up so that they can make summer moves. And maybe it's the perfect timing of like they get themselves through this first half. But I've talked about it a bunch. Like John Herdman, one of his great skills with the national team was his ability to use smoke and mirrors to cover up holes for short amounts of time. That's kind of what this first 3 weeks feel like. And the vibes alone might be enough to then from there spur it on. But there's the other side of it, which is like, what happens when it goes away? Like John Herdman very much feels at times like the guy when you were like played youth soccer or something where they're like, oh, we can like use this long throw as a decoy against this one team to play it off of the big guy and flick on. And it's like these small little moments that you can take advantage of, but they don't always exist. And it's not always going to get you over the top. And when that goes away, what's the soccer and where is it? And I think he's doing as well as he can with what they have available. That's more my fear than like Herdman long-term as a coach is you're looking at a team that has 12, 13 rotation players that you really trust in these moments. And that's not enough over the long course of a season, plus Canadian Championship, plus Leagues Cup to contend at a high level. So I think they'll be a playoff contender, but not top of the East.
No, I think they'll be outside of the playoffs looking in on decision day. I just think you cannot expect this team to throw shutouts all the time. You cannot expect Lorenzo Insigne to hit bangers all the time. The chance creation, the ability to get in dangerous positions, so far not there. It's not. You're winning
the Insigne part is probably the most repeatable, which is like if he's enjoying it and he's that good.
Don't completely disagree, but if you can't force opponents to deal with any other threats other than what, like Bernadeschi marauding forward off the wing, then okay, like cool, we're just going to bump. We're just not going to let Insigne get into those positions. Now, to be fair, they still should have known that already, and they're letting him do it. So who knows? I just don't think those shutouts are going to be sustainable. Right now, Gavron and Sean Johnson have some of the best like overperformance numbers among goalkeepers on XG. I'm with you. It's a little bit too much too soon, but they're not going to be bad. Just don't think they're going to be like a tried and true playoff team in the East.
Minnesota or Portland, which one would you trust? Which, if you had to pick one?
I'm Minnesota. I have more trust, I think, in Minnesota's back line to give them some stability to let the Reynosos and Pukis build off of. Right now for Portland, I think that's the weakness. Like the rest of the team, I don't know. There's a lot of good pieces, and Cabecita is going to elevate a lot of the biggest ones. But I trust this sounds crazy. I trust Reynoso to be more consistently a difference maker than I do Evander right now. That sounds crazy. I said that out loud and I'm not
sure. Why does that sound crazy? Because he's not on the field?
Yeah. And he's
I don't think that's crazy. That's the model we've seen in the past. I think it's unavoidable. I think Minnesota will have to at times take steps back under a new coach trying to figure things out than Portland will. And I think Portland has shown a history of like doing everything to eke out results rather than like, okay, what's the long-term build? Like bringing in Cabecita alone is like, how do we get better right now?
Yeah.
And not like, how are we better over the next 5 years? And that's kind of been Portland's history. My assumption is Portland will do those things where I think Minnesota positively is trying to build longer term.
All right. How about this one from Worskimo? It's like a Eskimo, I don't know, with wrong letters. Are we being too harsh on Chicago? They've played Philly, Cincy, and Columbus so far. Brutal opening run. Averaged more than a goal per game in that run. And then still a Fire fan, and this is starting to look great. That's the full name of his profile. By all accounts, a good offseason and not a fantastic start. Time to panic, or does their opponents and their play garner cautious optimism?
It's an interesting point about the opponents. They've got Montreal, New England, Atlanta, Houston, and Red Bulls coming
up. All three of those opponents are in CONCACAF Champions Cup too, by the way.
Yeah, fair. But those are also tough opponents. Like, yeah, it's fair. Not... when you're towards the bottom of the standings...
All things are true, yeah.
Yeah. Then you play a lot of good teams because you're the bad team.
You're the bad team. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the hype about the offseason was always still uncomfortable because it wasn't thorough. It was like, can this be a fix, but not wholesale changes top to bottom? And we've seen at times in MLS it work. I said it on the last show, like, I don't have any reason to believe it's going to shift a ton.
I think we might be too harsh on really drilling down on the chance creation and especially what it means for Hugo Kuipers. Because it's very early. Like, Kellen's still integrating. Guti's been given more responsibility. Kuipers just got to the United States, to this league. He's figuring it out. He needs service. Service takes chemistry. That takes time. Like, right now, the elephant in that room is Shaqiri and his performances, and can he be more reliable in that sense? The thing where I don't think we're being too harsh on Chicago is that they are replaying all of their failures from not just last year, but for many years. For many, many years. All the defensive, self-inflicted, like, how on earth did they do that to themselves in that particular moment? Things are still happening. They're just all still happening. And they've happened in three straight games. And if they can't eliminate that part of their DNA, I can't trust them. So that's where I would stand. How about this? Wrexham ATX. Woo! A lot going on there. What does Austin need to add this season, summer, to possibly sniff the playoffs?
Whew.
Well, Dreesen needs to be healthy.
I would say center back. Because Conte's been fine at times. Hedges is, when healthy, an upgrade. But the assumption that those two are going to play a ton of minutes this year feels low based off the last few years. And didn't Vaisanen get pulled in the first half already this season? So, like, there's not a ton of confidence there. That's an easy floor raiser of, like, if you get better at that position, and they've struggled to do that with the moves they've made, you're going to be more competitive, because I don't think they're going to spend the money to get the Yakumakis or Cucho up top to completely change their reality in goal scoring, because it feels like Borrello is trying to get his feet under him before he really throws around money and does things that you're sort of like putting your name on. And if they were solid and clean defensively and they could play compact enough where their line could play high up the field, I think there's enough goals in that team to sneak through to a playoff spot.
All right, how about this? The Cabecita number keeps dropping. It's apparently under 5 million right now. I haven't seen the official, hey, we signed to this guy, but it certainly seems like it's...
Well, why would you? Every time a report comes out, it's cheaper. Wait until it's free.
Yeah, that's a good point. But there's also a report from Tom Bogert. All the reports seem to emanate from Mr. Bogert, that U22 spots will no longer be coupled to DP spots. And I, for one, say huzzah. I hope that this happens. This is the right thing. It gives teams more flexibility in the way that they use these high leverage, potentially high investment spots that can make or break the way that their team plays, make or break their ability to re-sign talented young players, either through their academy or who they go out and sign otherwise. Like, it lessens the complications on investing in your team. And that's always what I'm here for. It means an extra possible senior DP if you want to use all your U22 spots. It just gives teams more options. It's not a huge move, but more options equal better teams, I think.
Yeah. So for anyone who didn't read the article, and you should subscribe to The Athletic and support Tom and Paul and Pablo and Jeff and all of them there and Meg. But as of now, you had to have either a young DP or a quote unquote low end DP as one of the three designated players.
A tammable DP, a DP yes. That could ultimately come down to TAM.
So to activate all three of the U22 spots. And it's why we see Leo Campana being held as a young DP for Inter Miami, because it activates those three spots. It's why we see Alex Ring be on a DP contract, technically, I think Darlington Nagbe at times as well, so that those teams could activate those spots. That is now decoupled. So you can do whatever you want with that third designated player spot and still have the three U22 spots. I think you said it. It allows more opportunity. It just is another way in which I'm hoping it allows teams to find themselves. Some teams will still do that. Some teams will use that in different ways. Some teams will find still a Nwobodo who kind of fits into a tammable DP spot that fits for them, and then maybe uses the U22 spots at a bigger level than a team that spends $12 million on a striker and wants their three DPs at that highest investment level. But I think it gives more space for teams to find themselves. And I think that makes the league more fun because you have more variance.
Completely agree. Now, this is interesting for some teams, which I have to imagine they had a feeling that something like this was coming. But when you look at some of the moves, you know, made around the league, for, you know, the Timbers are one of them. Yeah, you look at DC United and signing Matty Peltola. Man, I got to get that one locked down. But as a young DP, opened up U22 possibilities for them, even though they're not really taking advantage of it. But that's the other thing is, like, we need teams to have the scouting infrastructure, the decision-making processes in place, the understanding of what their club is, what the profiles are looking for, and what works and fits in MLS to make those spots matter and count. Like, you just having the spots is not the differentiator. It's filling the spots with players who can make an impact on your roster that is going to elevate Major League Soccer. And, you know, one of those things that I think could help the league going forward too is just increasing the ability to get out of bad decisions. Because just because you scout and go through your process doesn't mean you make great decisions. One buyout a year is a get out of jail free card on one signing, potentially. I think there might be value to more of those for CSOs. But
and let me just mention, so back to the previous convo, Jairo Torres being a young DP was an opening for Chicago Fire to use the U22 spots. They haven't used all of them. Oh, no, they have. They have.
I think Gutierrez is one of them.
Gutierrez is one of them.
It's a great use.
For sure. In now replacing Jairo Torres, you can make whatever signing you want. You are not restricted. And I've said it a million times with Orlando, relying on young players at big spots is tough. It's just tough to have a team on your shoulders as a young player trying to find your way, especially in a new league. Now you have a scenario in which Chicago can bring in a big name, reliable, designated player as a third DP in that team, and then have U22 guys who can play off those players and learn. I think Anthony's a really great example of, like, if the game's on Anthony's shoulders, I don't know what he's doing for Portland, but he can find his space on the side because the focus is on Evander, the focus is on Paredes, Chara, Moreno, all of those guys. And I think Cabecito will add to that. So the hope is, as you said, some of these teams that left this spot open, you left it open because the summer is easier to shop in, because most teams, their contracts are up. Most teams can make moves. Players are on free contracts. But it'll be interesting to see now what those teams do with these spots that would have been restricted if they had made the signings this winter.
All right. Last one here. Brandon Popper. Oh, guys, I'd love for you to go over some of the laws of the game, LOTG, and give examples of plays from the first few weeks of MLS plays. Brandon, we have a show. I host it, Instant Replay. Sometimes Dave jumps on there and drops refereeing takes. It is literally this, my man. Go watch Instant Replay. It's still on YouTube. It is on Apple Season Pass. We go through all of this, but if I had to name a law of the game that my favorite, obviously Law 12. Anybody who says it's not Law 12 is just out of their mind. Fouls and misconduct always should be number one. All the procedural stuff. Offside, no. Law 12, and I'm going to take the handling laws within Law 12 as my personal favorite. So Andrew says I have to stop talking about refereeing, that there is a show dedicated to this. So any final thoughts, Dave? Are we out of here?
No, that was like one of the worst conversations I've ever been a part of.
It was a one-way conversation yeah. Between me and my guy Brandon Popper. Anyway, that's it for us. Big thanks to Troy Lassane and everybody for listening. Enjoy all the free action on MLS Season Pass this weekend. We will see you on Monday to break it down. Adios.